Well, it is coffee time, and in fact, we don't often have guests in the studio. They don't often let me out. They let me out on Saturday morning to go up to Raymond Terrace, and it's nice to have visitors in the studio. Somebody I've spoken to on a number of occasions is the Shadow Minister for Climate Change and Energy. He's also the member for Fairfax in Queensland. Ted O'Brien is in the studio. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Richard. Great to be here in person with you.
Nice to have you here. A Broncos supporter. Happy you had another good win
on
the weekend.
I won't boast, mate. We've got a few pretty tough games ahead, but it was a great weekend for the Broncos.
And the reason you're here is obviously the closing of Liddell Power Station. I think the final reactor, they turn it off on Wednesday, and I believe there's a 10-day process, and that's it. It's all over Red Rover.
It's all over. That final unit goes down, and the old girl is put to rest, mate.
And look, a lot of people have been saying, suggesting that Chris Minns, and I think in the lead up to the New South Wales election, both Labor and Liberal were suggesting they might intervene to keep it open. I think the last time I spoke to you, you were saying, no, it's gone beyond the point of no return now. You can't really resurrect it.
Yeah, look, hypothetically, it would have been lovely if that could have been done, but... You know, I think it's just too late. I mean, certainly too late now. And if you try to do it the last couple of months, it would have been too late. Unfortunately, we are where we are. And it starts off a pretty turbulent era, I think, for Australia. Because, you know, we are now going to see 20 gigawatts up through till 2035 exiting the grid. 20 gigawatts. I mean,
right.
That's 80%.
But I mean, we haven't been getting 20 gigawatts out of Liddell, though,
No. I'm not talking about Liddell representing. It's the start, right? So yeah. Liddell comes off, and I mean, Liddell's total capacity is about 2 gigawatts. Hasn't been working on 2 recently. I think the big issue here for us is Liddell begins a process. It starts pulling off baseload power. And we're going to have 80% of our baseload power ripped out of the grid by 2035 with zero guarantee of a replacement. That's what it's all about.
Right.
And it starts here. It starts now.
Well, the impact, I mentioned there's an article in today's Australian Financial Review, the imminent shutdown of the power station that provides more than 10% of news, and I've heard up to 30%, but you know, that Liddell provides, so we'll say 10%, of New South Wales electricity may drive up power prices and trigger more frequent squeezes on suppliers, coal closures accelerate. And that's all your argument, isn't it? It's going to shove prices up. We're going to have shortages. We're going to have blackouts.
Yeah. And, you know, Richard, I mean, we've spoken about this before, right? I have not met any analyst that says we don't have a supply problem in Australia. We have a supply problem, and that is particularly due to Labor trying to kill off the gas industry. But we've got a supply problem. So when you take supply off the market, of course, you have less supply. Less supply drives prices up, right? And you've just got to hope that winter doesn't bite, and then summer is going to be the real test.
Well, the ACCC a fortnight ago was saying we won't have a gas shortage in the short term.
Well, they were saying that in the short term, maybe we're going to have enough now, but everything's predicated on the weather.
Yeah.
And so that's the challenge, right? And I'm not a brave enough fella to start predicting the weather. But if it is people are looking at the weather saying, you know what, winter this year may not be as bad as last year. I think we might have enough. But, I mean, we're Australia, for crying out loud. We shouldn't have a business model where we're really comfortable saying, oh, I think we've got just enough. I mean, seriously? Third world countries talk like that. Australia shouldn't talk like that. We have an abundance of resources. We should be enjoying those resources, and our households shouldn't be paying exorbitant prices, and our businesses should have confidence so they can keep employing people and keep investing.
20 to 8, Monday morning with Richard King, my guest, Shadow Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Ted O'Brien, who's in Newcastle. You'll be heading out to Liddell. What do you think should be doing? I mean, what should we be doing? The plan was that this gas peaking plant at Kurri Kurri, the former coalition government, this was supposed to be completed before Liddell closed. It's now 12 months behind schedule. It won't
That's
be
till right.
late next year, and also to its way over budget. And as I understand it, there's no gas connected to that.
Yeah, no, correct. So Richard, when AGL made its decision on Liddell, the coalition government then negotiated an extension of Liddell. And we also said we need to have a plan to ensure that we don't have instability in the grid. So that's when we invest in Kurri Kurri for gas. Now, what has subsequently happened is we've lost government, Labor's come in, and instead of backing in that Kurri Kurri plant, Labor said, no, we want a different sort of a plant. We want it to be running 30% hydrogen from day one. Now, as a result, I mean, and nobody said
green hydrogen too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was just daft, right? So, but nevertheless, they're being pig-headed about it. They're saying, no, that's what's got to happen.
They're not still saying hydrogen, though. I think
they're not saying anything now. But they're saying, well, you know, maybe it could be a different percentage. Who knows? So, but it's all vague. But what they should be saying, they should come out and drop the hydrogen prerequisite. Mm. That's what I'm calling on them to do. It's rot. Everyone knows it's rot. So just get on with it being a gas plant. Because once this summer hits, I tell you what, there is a real risk that we're going to see the lights go out.
Right. Okay. In fairness, though, the operators of Liddell, AGL, there was no desire for them to spend the money to upgrade it and keep it going. I mean, and there's been no desire to build coal-fired power stations in Australia by private enterprise.
Oh, Richard, look, you're right. I'm glad you mentioned it, because I've been out to Liddell. I've checked it out. I've met with AGL on a number of occasions, and my criticism doesn't go to them. They gave the market a lot of warning on this. By my judgment, it looks as though they've really tried to do the right thing by the workers. The issue here is government policy. We have government policy that is driving further premature closures of baseload power stations. I mean, we're talking today. I just looked at my phone. I've got this little app. And right now, New South Wales is running 70% on coal. 70% on coal. Now, if you think of baseload power across our entire grid, 80% gone by 2035. It's just gone. Hmm. There is zero guarantee of a replacement. That's the real issue. And what we see in Liddell is just the start of that. And it's not the full 20 gigawatts that's leaving this month in Liddell. But it's such a minor proportion. But already you've got the likes of the article, you know, you just read out before from the Financial Review saying, whoa, hang on, this actually could be a price shock. What's going to happen with supply? And my point is, yeah, and we've barely even started. That's the issue.
All right. We're being told, and it is happening, people are building big batteries everywhere. There's more wind farms. We've got solar everywhere. Your argument is, yeah, maybe down the track it might be able to cope, but not in the near future.
Correct. And look, the coalition's always been pro-renewables, and I personally am too. The thing is, you've got to set renewables up for success, not failure. And, you know, it's said all the time, but I'll repeat it, the sun doesn't shine, the wind doesn't blow, renewables can't do the job. And that's why Kurri Kurri was so important, right? You need gas to come in. It's dispatchable.
All right. Do you think we should be building more of these gas peaking plants around the country?
I think we need more gas everywhere. And first and foremost, we need more gas extracted. We need more pipelines to get gas around. But I think it's inevitable that as baseload power coal exits, we're going to need more gas. Otherwise, renewables won't do the job. So, you know, we've got to start treating technologies as partners. It's all about a mix of technologies, not saying one technology is better than the other. They work together because they have different benefits, different capabilities. They complement each other, you know?
Ted O'Brien, my guest. Ted is in Newcastle. He's the Shadow Minister for Climate Change and Energy. I know you're a fan of nuclear power. Nobody seems to want to talk about that. I mentioned to you before, just as you came into the studio, Germany has begun shutting off its last three nuclear reactors, ending six decades of nuclear power that helped spawn one of Europe's strongest protest movements. Of course, you know, everybody's been, well, I think after Fukushima, they shut them down and then they kept them going again. And now they've got three left and they're going to shut them down. It seems that, you know, the world is divided on nuclear power.
Well, I think the world has been divided, Richard, and I think what Germany is doing is causing a lot of eyebrows to be raised across the world at the moment. You are right. I mean, Angela Merkel was not in favour of nuclear, and post-Fukushima, she made a decision. And, you know, basically what we're seeing now is that the gradual closure. Meanwhile, you've got another 33 economies in the world that have nuclear and they want more. And you've got another 50 countries wanting to introduce nuclear for the first time, or at least considering to do so. So the rest of the world is saying we want more nuclear, mainly because of energy security and climate change.
Yes, I think Peter Dutton, your leader, is in fan of these small nuclear reactors. But a number of other people have said, well, look, we're in the perfect position here in Australia. Let the rest of the world iron out all the problems with these small nuclear reactors. When they've got them perfected, then maybe we can think about it. Is that your view as well?
Well, not really. I mean, I think those who like to push nuclear into the never-never will always say, oh, no, let's just wait till other people do things, right? Mm. No one is saying, including Peter Dutton nor me, nobody is saying that we should have first-of-a-kind reactor. We should wait until certain reactors are tested. There's no doubt about that. But that doesn't mean we have to sit around and wait. We can get going. I mean, Generation 3 Plus technology is the latest technology. These small modular reactors are Generation 3 Plus nuclear technologies. There are already Generation 3 Plus technologies working in the world on grids, doing their job. So it's not like this sort of thing is just on a piece of paper. I personally have visited nuclear sites. I have visited a handful of vendors of small modular reactors. These things are real, and they're coming, and countries are going there because they are zero emissions technology. So it's great for climate change. They are 24/7, so they can provide the baseload power, and they can also ramp up, ramp down, so they complement renewables.
And
I mean,
here,
quite extraordinary.
Here in Australia, we have the raw material to run them.
Yeah, exactly, Richard. I mean, we've got the biggest reserves in the world. Australia has it. So we've got, when it comes to energy security, which is something we don't talk enough about as a country, Australia has what we need. Nuclear, the rest of the world is going nuclear because of energy security and climate change. We've got what it takes. We've just signed off on the AUKUS agreement. So think about that. Only last weekend we celebrated 70 years of ANSTO, 70 years of nuclear in Australia, a nuclear reactor in Sydney. 70 years. We've had 7 decades of this stuff. We've just done AUKUS, so we're going to have nuclear subs. And we've got the Labor government saying we don't even want to talk about the possibility of nuclear energy. It doesn't stack up.
Just finally, The Voice. I've got to mention
The Voice.
You're on the front bench of the opposition. Julian Leese has stood down now. Simon Birmingham said, look, I'm not going to actively support the no case, but I'm not going to stand down from the... Are you going to defect as well over The Voice?
No,
or
look...
You're standing firm?
I think absolutely standing firm. I think there's one thing that unites all Australians, and that is we want to see our First Peoples advance their cause, especially people in remote communities, children and women. The question then is, well, how best do we do that? When it comes to the Constitution, I think everybody would agree that our First Peoples should be recognised in the Constitution. But The Voice is something completely different.
All right, but look, let me clarify this. Mm. As I understand it, the party room voted for, but it wasn't mentioned afterwards, a national voice that would be legislated, not enshrined in the Constitution. Is that correct?
No, so, I mean, the party room doesn't work like that in terms of, you know, if people think it's a bit like the parliament where you sort of, you know, you pass a piece of legislation and people vote and so forth. It's not so much like that. But there was a big discussion in the party room. I mean, you don't go into the details, which I won't breach party room, but since you asked the question, the principal proposition that was put in the party room was, how do we respond to Albanese's proposal of a Canberra voice? Overwhelmingly, people said, we don't want that. Then there was a discussion about, well, okay, let's be clear, though. It's not just a matter of us saying no. We're also saying yes. And the main thing that we're saying yes to is recognising Indigenous heritage, Indigenous people in our Constitution. And that's a huge thing because I think it can unite the entire country. There was then a discussion which really went to the importance of local and regional voices. And I believe in that. I mean, if I think, you know, I'm from the sunny coast, as you know, Richard, and, you know, we've got our Gubby Gubby mob up there, right? Terrific guys. And I spent a bit of time with them at the local footy, actually, on the weekend. I want their voices heard. And if you look at some of the tragedies that continue to unfold in remote communities, you know, I went to some of those missions as a teenager. A lot of stuff hasn't changed. Mm. And this isn't pointing the finger at people. This is just saying, well, how do you get the right outcomes at the grassroots level? And we genuinely do not believe it's through having a new bureaucracy based in Canberra. You're not going to get the local voices heard there. And you don't change the constitution when the Prime Minister himself can't even explain the impact it's going to have.
Right.
I mean, this is dangerous,
but you
right?
do agree with constitutional recognition.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah. And this is, again, it goes back to, I have great fear that the way the Prime Minister has run the process, the proposition he's put up, is going to divide Australians. We have an opportunity to unite Australians. Let's unite Australians around recognising our First Peoples in the Constitution, but not introducing a voice that has powers that can't be defined. No one knows what it's all about. That is actually taking Australia down a dangerous path. I think it'll be divisive, Richard.
Good to talk to you.
Lovely to talk to you.
Good to meet you.
Yeah,
having done it over the phone a few times, and enjoy your stay in Newcastle. You'll be heading out to Liddell a little bit later this morning.
We'll be doing speaking further at Curry Curry later today too. Mm. So, love being in Newcastle again. So,
good.
And good luck to the Knights.
Yeah, well, good luck. Yeah, I think you've got Parramatta on.
We've got Parramatta. So, we've got some tough ones going ahead. But we're top
Broncos
of the table
fan,
at the moment, but I don't want to be egotistical because...
Queensland, yeah. I won't hold it against you, Ted.
Thanks, Richard. Lovely to be here, mate.
Thank you for coming in. Ted O'Brien, who's Shadow Minister for Climate Change and Energy.